Roman Empire is collapsing. Germanic tribes are sweeping across Europe. Ancient knowledge hangs in the balance. And one former slave is about to preserve Western civilization by converting Ireland to Christianity. This isn't fiction. This is the real story of St. Patrick. In the next 15 minutes, I'm going to reveal how a Roman citizen named Patrick was enslaved by Irish pagans, escaped after 6 years, and then made the astonishing decision to return to his captors, ultimately transforming them from persecutors into disciples. You'll discover how this remarkable man's mission to convert Ireland became crucial to preserving classical learning during Europe's darkest hour. Have you ever wondered how a comfortable Roman citizen ended up a slave in the most barbaric corner of Europe? The answer will change how you see divine purpose in suffering. The man we know as St. Patrick wasn't born with that name. He was born Patricius, son of a Roman deacon named Calpurnius, and a grandson of a priest. They were Roman aristocracy in Britain during the early 5th century. Young Patrick lived in a villa near Banavem, Tabernay, on Britain's western coast, where his father served as a decurion, which is a local government official. This represented Roman civilization with its educations, its bath, and its ordered society. The Roman world, however, was crumbling. By 410 AD, Emperor Honorius had withdrawn legions to defend Italy against barbarians, telling British towns to look to their own defense. Coastal defenses fell into disrepair, leaving wealthy communities exposed to raiders from across the Irish Sea. The Irish tribes were feared throughout the Roman world for their ferocity. They practiced human sacrifice, collected enemy heads as trophies, and Roman chroniclers described them as, quote, the most savage of all of Britain's enemies. They had long watched the wealthy Roman settlements, waiting for Roman power to weaken. And that opportunity came when Patrick was just 16 years old. Raiders struck without warning. The attack was swift and brutal. Neighbors were slaughtered as they tried to resist, buildings engulfed in flames, screaming, echoing across the once peaceful estate. And Patrick, the privileged young aristocrat, was bound and thrown into a slave ship with thousands of other captives. Patrick was sold to a chieftain named Milchu in Antrim, in what is now Northern Ireland. Every comfort of civilization vanished, and instead of being served, Patrick became the servant, tending sheep on his remote mountainsides. His life transformed dramatically. No baths, no fine clothes, only harsh exposure to the Atlantic weather. And for 6 years, from age 16 to 22, Patrick endured near starvation, inadequate shelter, and constant exposure to the elements. In his confession, Patrick later wrote, "I was taken into captivity in Ireland with many thousands of people. We deserved this because we had gone away from God and did not keep his commandments." Despite growing up in a Christian family, he admitted, "I did not know the true God." And his faith, it had been hollow, and it had been formal. But in his captivity, something profound happened. "I would pray up to 100 times every day, and nearly as many at night," Patrick wrote. "I would remain in the forests and on the mountain, and I would wake to pray before the dawn in all weather, snow, frost, and rain." And in the freezing rain and isolation, Patrick discovered genuine faith. "The Lord opened my unbelieving mind," he explained. The empty religion of his childhood became a living relationship with God. Those 6 brutal years gave Patrick 3 crucial assets: fluency in the Irish language, intimate knowledge of Irish customs and religion, and spiritual discipline forged through extreme hardship. What appeared to be a tragedy became preparation for Patrick's future mission, returning to convert the very people who had enslaved him. So what about this miraculous escape and this divine call? Well, after 6 years of slavery, Patrick's life was about to take an astonishing turn. The transformation that began on those cold Irish hillsides was just the first chapter of his incredible journey. What happened next will show how far a man will go when he believes God is speaking, even if it means risking death by walking hundreds of miles through hostile lands towards a ship he had no reason to believe existed. One night, after years of constant prayer, in harsh conditions, Patrick experienced something extraordinary. And while sleeping, a voice spoke to him clearly. You have fasted well. Very soon you will return to your native country. This revelation deepened when the voice continued. Look, your ship is ready, Patrick. Patrick faced a daunting reality. He was approximately 200 miles from the nearest coast with no money, no provisions, and no direction. If caught fleeing, he faced severe punishment or death. The rational choice would have been to dismiss this as a mere dream, but Patrick's faith had been forged in extreme hardship. I went in the strength of God, who directed my way to my good, and I feared nothing until I came to that ship, he wrote. His certainty guided him away from everything familiar, through territories where he was a foreigner and a former slave, with only his inner conviction that God was leading him. The journey tested every limit of his endurance. Patrick trudged across unfamiliar terrain, his feet blistered on rocky paths while hunger gnawed at his stomach. He avoided settlements where questions might be raised about a lone traveler navigating throughout the forests and across the streams, sleeping exposed to the elements with only his prayers for comfort. When Patrick finally reached the coast, exhausted and gaunt, he found the promised ship, yet his vulnerability was painfully apparent, a ragged stranger requesting passage. The captain dismissed him immediately. Standing alone on the shoreline, Patrick turned to prayer, as he had during his captivity, and remarkably, the captain suddenly reversed his decision. The voyage brought new trials. After 3 days at sea, they landed in a barren wilderness, where the crew wandered for 28 days without food. As starvation loomed, the captain turned to Patrick. Christian, you say your God is great and all-powerful. Then why can't you pray for us? Patrick responded with unwavering faith, and shortly after his prayer, a herd of pigs appeared, saving the crew. Eventually, Patrick reached Britain, reuniting with his family, who had presumed that he was dead, and the comfortable Roman youth was gone, now replaced by a man of profound spiritual conviction. This miraculous escape prepared Patrick for what would come years later while continuing his spiritual journey in Britain, and he received another vision, a man named Victoricus, bringing letters from Ireland. As Patrick opened them, he heard Irish voices crying, "We appeal to you, holy servant boy, to come and walk among us once more." The divine call now demanded something almost unimaginable, returning voluntarily to the land of his captivity to minister to the very people who had enslaved him. While most people would consider Patrick's escape from slavery the end of the Irish story, the church saw something extraordinary in this former slave that were not taught about in the simplified St. Patrick's Day celebrations. The Vatican had bigger plans for Patrick than anyone could have imagined, and Rome's strategy for transforming a traumatized escapee into a powerful missionary bishop reveals how seriously they took the conversion of Ireland. After hearing those Irish voices calling him to return, Patrick recognized that he needed legitimate authority and training to face his former captors. The church understood this necessity. For Patrick to succeed where others might fail, he needed to transform from a slave with a limited formal education into a bishop, capable of converting an entire pagan nation. Patrick traveled to Gaul, modern-day France, studying at the monastery of Lérins and training under the Bishop Germanus of Auxerre. This rigorous preparation spanned years, culminating in Patrick's ordination to the priesthood by Germanus himself, who recognized the exceptional qualities in this determined man who had survived slavery and wished to return to his captors. Patrick's path faced significant obstacles, particularly from the British clergy, who questioned his qualifications, education, and moral character. In his confession, Patrick refers to past sins. His contemporaries would repeatedly use these past sins against him, in fact. And while we don't know precisely what this indiscretion was, it became a weapon that his enemies wielded to undermine his authority as a Catholic bishop. Interestingly, Patrick wasn't the church's first choice for the Irish mission. Pope Celestine I had initially sent Bishop Palladius to Ireland in 431 AD, but his mission failed when he encountered fierce opposition from local chieftains. This failure created an opportunity for Patrick, who possessed crucial advantages. Again, intimate knowledge of the Irish language and culture from his years of captivity and an unshakable conviction of his divine calling. After Palladius's mission collapsed, Pope Celestine entrusted Patrick with converting Ireland through an official papal commission. His ordination as bishop provided the authority necessary to build church structures, ordain priests, establish dioceses, and create the framework for Christianity to flourish. Patrick prepared thoroughly before his return. He gathered companions, collected essential religious texts, acquired supplies for celebrating Mass, and strengthened himself spiritually for confrontations with Druids and pagan priests, who wielded enormous influence over Irish society. When Patrick returned to Ireland around 432, he was fundamentally transformed. No longer the frightened slave who had fled years before, he returned as an authorized representative of Western Europe's dominant spiritual authority, carrying both personal conviction and the Catholic Church's full weight of authority. Patrick's background uniquely prepared him for this mission through a powerful synthesis of experiences. Again, his years as a slave provided intimate cultural knowledge. His training established a solid theological foundation for explaining Christianity to pagans, and his episcopal authority gave him the credibility to establish lasting church structures. And this combination made Patrick singularly equipped for the monumental task of converting Ireland. Battling the Druids. Patrick's spiritual warfare. The church may have given Patrick his authority, but at the Hill of Slane, that authority was about to be tested in a showdown that would determine the spiritual future of an entire nation. When Patrick lit that forbidden paschal fire within the site of King Larry's festival at Tara, he created both a symbolic and literal clash of cultures, directly challenging the established juridic power structure that had controlled Ireland for generations. You need to understand how these Druids dominated Irish society. They functioned as the ruling intellectual elite of Celtic culture, controlling virtually every aspect of life, serving as the king's closest advisors, interpreting ancient laws, presiding over religious ceremonies, and maintaining the sacred oral traditions. Similar to modern-day judges, professors, and priests all combined into one powerful class, their word was law, and their approval determined a king's legitimacy. And this is what makes Patrick's confrontation at Tara so extraordinary. He deliberately chose the pagan festival of Beltane, one of the most sacred days in the Celtic calendar, when King Larry had decreed that no fire could be lit before the royal fire at Tara, a powerful symbol of the established order. And Patrick's fire on the Hill of Slane, clearly visible from Tara, represented Christ's resurrection and constituted a direct spiritual challenge to the old system. The Druids immediately recognized the threat, and when they and King Larry summoned Patrick, they were preparing to eliminate this challenge to their authority. The chief Druid, Lochru, led the attack, they likely invoking spiritual forces against this Catholic bishop. But what followed was genuine spiritual warfare. Patrick, facing the fury of Ireland's most powerful Druid, responded with prayer. The ancient accounts describe a terrifying scene. Lochru, suddenly seized by an invisible force, lifted high into the air, his face contorted in panic before being violently dashed to the ground, his skull crushed against a stone. Witnesses stood frozen, the air charged with supernatural tension. Even King Larry, remaining pagan himself, couldn't deny the power working through Patrick, and after witnessing multiple demonstrations of spiritual authority, including Patrick's use of the shamrock to explain the Trinity, as is often the one thing people remember, the king granted him the freedom to preach throughout Ireland, a concession that transformed Irish history. Patrick's campaign continued beyond words. He directly confronted pagan idols across all of Ireland, most notably the fearsome Cromcrotch, a central idol surrounded by 12 smaller figures, reportedly demanding human sacrifice. When Patrick raised his crozier against it, the idols sank into the ground, demonstrating Christianity's power over the old gods. Modern historians often minimize these supernatural elements, preferring to cast Patrick as a cultural diplomat. However, the historical record shows a frontal spiritual assault on a deeply entrenched pagan system that had dominated the Irish life for centuries. The remarkable achievement was accomplishing all of this without any military force. Unlike many later conversions of pagan people, no armies backed Patrick, no forced baptisms occurred at sword point. His victory over the Druids came through spiritual means, through prayer, and through signs and wonders, and through the power of the gospel message itself. So this is Patrick's forgotten legacy, and how he saved, in a sense, Western civilization, like one of his coterminous saints, Saint Benedict. While Patrick's spiritual revolution was transforming Ireland's soul, something catastrophic was happening across the rest of Europe. The timing couldn't have been more providential. As Patrick was baptizing converts and establishing churches, Rome itself was being ransacked by barbarian invaders. The very foundations of Western civilization were crumbling. Libraries burned to ash, ancient manuscripts vanished forever. The accumulated knowledge of centuries disappeared into the chaos. Patrick created the last sanctuary for Western knowledge as Europe descended into darkness. The monasteries he established across Ireland became intellectual fortresses, while learning was under assault everywhere else. They preserved vital classical texts on astronomy, mathematics, philosophy, and literature that would have been otherwise lost to history. At the exact moment Patrick was converting the Irish, the intellectual lights were going out all across Europe. The Roman Empire, the greatest civilizing force that the Western world had known, was collapsing. Meanwhile, Ireland, this remote island at the edge of the known world, was beginning its journey into literacy and learning through one former slave following a divine calling. The situation was deeply ironic. Ireland had been considered the most barbaric corner of Europe, so wild that the Romans never even bothered to conquer it. And yet, as Europe's civilized regions descended into the Dark Ages, this former barbarian outpost became civilization's last hope. The monasteries Patrick established became extraordinary centers of scholarship. Irish monks meticulously copied ancient manuscripts by hand, preserving Aristotle's natural philosophy, Euclid's geometry, and countless literary works that would have otherwise disappeared forever. And while knowledge was being destroyed on the continent, Ireland protected it and expanded it. And this just seems to be the monastic way. Benedict and his monks did the same thing. But Ireland's geographic isolation shielded it from the waves of destruction sweeping across Europe. The barbarian hordes that sacked Rome never reached Irish shores. And more importantly, Patrick's transformed Ireland culture. At its core, it converted to an entire societal system. One of Patrick's most profound impacts was transitioning Ireland from oral culture to written culture. Before Patrick, Irish tradition and knowledge was passed down verbally through generations. And this isn't new or even out of the blue for anybody. Right? The early Christians passed on oral tradition as well. But Patrick introduced Christianity alongside literacy itself. And now knowledge could be preserved. It could be accumulated. And it could be transmitted with unprecedented accuracy. Oral storytellers became scribes and scholars, using their natural Irish eloquence to preserve humanity's greatest ideas. The fruit of Patrick's work expanded throughout Europe in the following centuries. Again, Irish missionary monks, spiritual descendants of Patrick, traveled across the continent, establishing monasteries and centers of learning. Columba took Patrick's legacy to Scotland, founding the influential monastery at Iona. Columbianus established monasteries across France, Italy, and Switzerland, and these Irish monks preserved and disseminated the foundations of Western thought when it was most endangered. These Irish monasteries preserved Patrick's own writings and classical works, forming the bedrock of Western philosophy, literature, and science. When darkness covered Europe, these Irish candles kept the flame of knowledge burning. The full impact of this preservation emerged centuries later during the Carolingian Renaissance, the first attempt to rebuild Western civilization after the Dark Ages. The seeds that Patrick had planted in Irish soil eventually sprouted across an entire continent. So what is Patrick's message for today? Well, we are embracing a continuously falling into neo-pagan culture, and the same spiritual, secular historians who downplay Patrick's role in preserving Western civilization are even more reluctant to acknowledge something far more relevant, that Patrick's confrontation with Irish paganism, it offers us the exact blueprint we need for reclaiming our own culture from the new paganism, sweeping across the Western world, Europe, and America. What if the answers to our cultural crisis have been hiding in plain sight for 1600 years? Look at the parallels. Patrick faced a thoroughly pagan Ireland where human sacrifice and idol worship were commonplace. We're confronting a modern society where self-centeredness and ideological tribalism have become the dominant religions. And let's not forget that human sacrifice happens to the tune of at least a million a year here in the States. We just hide it behind skin and we call it reproductive choice. The spiritual dynamics mirror each other quite remarkably. In his confession, Patrick declared, "I cannot be silent about such great blessings and such a great gift that the Lord so kindly bestowed on the land of my captivity." Patrick understood that when you possess life-changing truth, silence becomes cruelty. Today's churches often seek relevance by diluting doctrine and avoiding cultural confrontation, but Patrick took the opposite approach. He respected Irish culture, but stood firmly on the essential truth. He challenged false beliefs while offering something better, much like we must address today's cultural orthodoxies that demand conformity rather than dialogue. Patrick's commitment shines through in his words. "I have not been devious with even one of them, nor do I think of doing so, for the sake of God and His church." This unwavering dedication to truth, regardless of consequences, marks what is missing in much of today's Christian cultural engagement. Patrick built alternative communities and institutions within pagan territory. These weren't isolated Christian enclaves, but transformative centers that engaged with and eventually converted the surrounding culture. Consider how this parallels today's need for faith communities that create genuine alternatives to fragmented modern life while remaining engaged with broader society. His strategy included deliberately focusing on converting leaders and social elites first. Historical records show that he specifically baptized the sons of kings and interacted with their chieftains. He recognized that cultural transformation often flows from the top down. Win the influencers, and you'll eventually transform the culture. A principle progressives have applied effectively by capturing key institutions like universities and entertainment. Patrick's personal holiness gave credibility to his message. And again, in his confession, he humbly refers to himself as Patrick, a sinner, unlearned, the least of all the faithful. The Irish witnessed a man whose lifestyle matched his message. His sacrificial living validated everything that he proclaimed. The transformation was remarkable, and Patrick wrote that the Irish who once knew of God except to serve idols, knew not of God except to serve idols, had become the people of the Lord. And this cultural reversal didn't occur through political power or compromise, but through unwavering truth proclaimed by someone willing to sacrifice everything. The applications for today are clear. Instead of seeking cultural approval or political power, Christians need to focus on building alternative institutions, engaging cultural influencers, and embodying the truth that we proclaim boldly. When Patrick arrived in Ireland, converting the nation seemed impossible, and our cultural challenges may seem equally daunting, but Patrick's example shows that transformation is possible when truth is proclaimed without compromise. So in conclusion, looking at the data today, we can see a pattern emerging that's eerily similar to what Patrick confronted in the 5th century Ireland. Church attendance across Western nations has plummeted while paganism in various modern forms seems to be on the rise. This isn't coincidental. It's cyclical, like a long dormant flame now reigniting in reverse. Patrick's legacy is simple yet profound. One person with unwavering conviction transformed an entire nation through spiritual authority rather than force. His example challenges us at our own cultural crossroads. Will we respond with both uncompromising truth and compassionate engagement? History whispers a powerful reality the establishment rarely emphasizes. If Christianity built Western civilization from pagan ruins once before, then it stands ready to rebuild it again, not through dominance, but through the same conviction that drove Patrick to transform Ireland.